Welcome to Across the Pond Wargamers. Tonight, we're going to do something a little different. Colin and I are getting together and having some beers with some of the guys from the Telford Wargames group. Those are the guys I used to wargame with. And back in the day, when we could get together, we used to all head down to the pub after a night of games and sit around and talk about those games. Nothing important, nothing fancy, just having some beers and talking about wargaming. So with this podcast, we invite you to be a fly on the wall and listen to five guys pass the time chatting about wargaming. Help us kick 2020 down the road, and let's usher in a better 2021. Thank you for listening. Welcome to Across the Pond Wargamers. This is going to be the last show of the year. And Colin and I thought the best way to cheer out, send out the year was with some old gaming buddies from across the pond. I've got some guys up from the Telford War Games Club joining us, and going to warn everybody right now, there is no agenda to this podcast. There is no script. There is no anything. We're just going to have beers and chat about the year. That's it. So I don't know if you guys want to introduce this year. Well, we can talk about what's going to happen next year too. I don't care. Because this year has sucked big time.
So yeah.
Let's do it. But I've got Matt, Simon, and Andy on the line, as well as Colin. Simon's been a guest before. You were a guest on our episode about aesthetics. Matt and Andy have been first timers. I'm not going to treat you guys like the first time where you have to go through your bios or anything like that. We'll do that when you're a guest later on. But I do want to get the history of the Wargaming Club before we start. Simon and Andy, you guys have been there from the beginning, right?
No, I didn't join until 1994.
Okay.
I'd been going for a fair few years when I joined. It started in the 80s sometime, didn't it, Simon?
It did, yes. Yeah, I started with it real early on. I was at Sixth Form College at the time, and Pete Remsen ran a shop called Gauntlet Games in Wellington, and he set it up, I guess around about 83, 84, somewhere around about there.
Wow.
And I started coming up, and then, of course, I went to, the Polytechnic then, and moved away with work, and then came back about 93, and it was still going, still got in touch and rejoined. And they were still there. So that's the real early part. And there was a big Dungeons and Dragons element.
Right.
And then all periods. And there was a lot of people there.
Wow.
Yeah, and it was all in Randlay.
Yeah, well, you guys were always at Randlay when I was there. And, I left in December 2006. And
yeah, I think by 1994, most of the D&D crowd must have gone, because it was only figure war gaming when I came up. I think there was about four people who were still doing a little bit on the RPG side. Not a lot then.
Yes, yeah, so there was quite a few from New College used to do Dungeons and Dragons. Used to see them there.
Yeah, well, D&D crowd. Everybody in wargaming has probably touched D&D at least once, except for the youngsters. Right. They're really youngsters. They may not have.
Because Colin, I did.
Yeah, you didn't? No.
I did. Oh, God, yes.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Now, Matt, when did you join, Matt? You joined up when?
Andy, when did I join?
When did you join? About two or three years ago.
And how many beers have you had already, Matt? And I want to make sure.
This is the first one.
Okay.
It's longer than 2 years ago. I think we've been to at least four Wolverhampton shows, so I'm going to say it's over 4 years.
So you're the baby of the club.
I am.
I've done four Wolverhampton shows. Well, that makes it.
Yeah.
It'll be coming on 5 years then, next March.
Yeah.
They do roll around quickly.
Because Wims was the last show we went to before it all went wrong.
Yes, it was.
First of all, guys, I'm going to say a toast to the end of 2020. Okay, so cheers, everybody.
Cheers, everybody.
Cheers.
Good call for the listener. Yeah. All right, so first of all, Matt, what are you drinking? You're drinking Brewdog IPA?
Brewdog Punk IPA, yeah.
Punk IPA, okay. Yeah. Colin, you got Bitburger in a can?
Yep. GB.
Yeah. All right. Simon and Andy, what are you guys drinking?
Stella here.
Stella. Oh, God.
Stella. Oh. Hey, they got the best commercials. New Brew?
I was going to get a glass of red wine, but I didn't want to be too sophisticated. So I thought, no, we'll have a beer.
I've got a local brewery called New Brew, which on a local industrial estate. They're black IPA.
Okay. I don't understand. Wow. I'm not an IPA guy. I'm just not. And I've got a Vahesh Definer, and it's a good old Weiss beer. So I'm not an IPA guy at all.
Too hard. Nice. Yeah. Yeah.
So, but
that import is it? Or they make it in America?
No. This is German. This is Bavarian.
I just prefer German beer.
German beer. I don't like IPAs. I like my Weiss beers, my Hefeweizens. And I'm really partial to the Germans. The Belgians seem to throw things in their beer that don't belong, like chocolate and orange and apples and crap like that. So I'm not a Belgian drinker, a Belgian beer, but I like my German beers. I'm pretty partial there.
Germany are very consistent with their beers.
Yeah. And it's, you know, the thing is there's a place over by where I live called Wine and Wares, which they have all sorts of fancy wines, but they import every type of beer you can imagine. But they don't do much British beers. I mean, I can get a Green King over there, or the Green King Abbot Ale. They'll have some of that there, or they'll do a Newcastle Brown. But you can get Newcastle Brown in grocery stores here because that's just mass produced. But you get very few British beers here. But they do good. They do a nice stock of German beers.
And they even do French. Yeah.
What was that?
They even do French. Was it 1664?
Yeah. That's not a bad beer.
Cronenberg.
Yeah. But that, you know, they say it's French, but that's actually from the Alsace-Lorraine region, which has been German more than it's been French. So come on. It's just a matter of which treaty was the last one signed is where that land falls. But they have there's a beer called Efes, which is a Turkish beer. And that is a really good beer. The history behind it was in the 1920s, a bunch of Germans went over to Turkey and they set up a brewery there. And the brewery just kind of did okay until 1945, when there was another influx of Germans that went over to Turkey and they revived that brewery and got it going. And it's been going great today, but it's a real German style beer, but it's called Efes and it's a Turkish beer. It's probably one of the best beers out there, in my opinion.
Wow.
So,
but
yeah. My sister-in-law lives out in Munich. And so at Christmas I normally get some of the bottled beers, but not this year because a bit too expensive to post. But hopefully we'll go back out there one day, and that's gorgeous out there.
Well, if you ever do, go to 21 Königstrasse, which is right across the street from the English Garden. Look at that apartment building and wave at it, because that's where I used to live.
Okay, yeah.
And right next door to it, it used to be, and I don't know if it still is, was the headquarters for the Grenzschutzpolizei, the German border police and such. And that's where their Grenzschutz Group 9 headquarters was for the state of Bavaria. It was right next door.
Oh, yes, yeah.
Those guys.
Careful which building you wave at then, Andy.
Yeah.
Make sure you get the address right.
Yeah, but they're proper, I won't say pub, but the beer gardens,
right?
Where you can sit 8,000 people in them.
Oh yeah. You got the Chinese Tower in the English Garden is a huge one. That's that. I don't know if you've ever seen it, but say if you go to the English Garden, which is like their Central Park, their Hyde Park type area, it's literally a tower modeled after a Chinese pagoda tower.
Yeah,
and they have a huge beer garden. They walk around. The beer servers walk around with their dirndls, the Bavarian dresses, and they're carrying these liter Moss Krug Moss liter steins around wherever they go.
Dozens
of them,
and you tend to get one beer. Get one beer in one great big barrel, and they just sort of, we went to it. They thought, well, there's no important. They just undo the tap, do your glasses, close the tap, and that's it. You don't get a choice.
Yeah, because it's what they're serving. We used
that's
to,
it. Yeah.
The Marine Security Guard attachment at the consulate, which is right over there, right not too far from there. I used to go running with those guys, and we would run from the Marine House to the Chinese Tower, have a beer, then run over to the Spaten Garden or the Ether Garden, which is near the bridge in there, because there's seven beer gardens in that area. We would hit all seven, and you'd have a down a beer and then run to the next one and down a beer and run to the next one.
Blimey.
Well, you wouldn't be running so well after the third one. Yeah, nobody held their beer after that. That was a they were puking and everything, but they kept going.
Your blood's going to be pumping around really quick then. That's going to get that alcohol really quickly to your system.
Yeah, well, I know more than once I ran into a tree while jogging with us. So
you weren't here last time.
Yeah, it was when I was young. So now, you know, I was young and dumb. Now I'm just old and dumb. So what was the last game everybody did?
DBA.
Yeah, that's right. We played two games of we played one large DBA, was it? Two armies aside, wasn't it?
Yeah, two armies aside.
Yeah.
And it was, yes. And it almost turned into just two individual games, didn't it, really? Because you and Dave focused on one side and me and Simon on the other side.
Yeah, it tends to be the way these things happen. It's a bit like when we play Warmaster, it tends to break up into two battles, rather than one big battle, until you get near the end when there's no troops left, and then they all seem to congregate in the middle then.
And I believe I won that DBA game, didn't I?
You did.
I didn't. By the time all three of you had gone, I hadn't lost a troop.
I like how Simon's got a bit of a quizzical look on his face. What do you mean?
Well, I'm just diplomatic.
Yeah, well, you know what the definition of a diplomat is, don't you?
Isn't it a wanker?
Well,
a diplomat is a person who has the ability to tell another person to go to hell and have them look forward to the trip.
So that's a good diplomat. We don't have many of them.
No.
No, not at the moment. We don't, anyway.
We've got a Euro deal.
Oh, now there's a bump.
All of that. Well, I was going to say, following the DBA game, I'm painting Persians, and I've been struggling with Sparabara whilst waiting for the call to start. And I think so. I've got two designs. So there's that one. Move it onto the camera, which is up and down. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
I'm trying to do chevrons as well, so I've got those two designs.
Did you struggle with that first one when the shields are marked up with where you need to paint?
I struggled with them both. And actually, I hadn't had a beer either. And you know what? I've never made such a fist of painting in all my life. I thought, oh well, a couple of chevrons, that'd be easy.
Why didn't you just stencil it?
I tried. My giddy aunt. So the figure's ready. So I'm just going to over to the camera. There you go. So I'm just going to put the Sparabara in the front. Flip your neck. Only need 13 stands. Oh, but anyway, so that was my struggle. And a quick deflection from politics.
So, nice switch.
Yeah.
I've been quite enjoying painting the English, but like I said, I won't show it. Well, I'll show one
thing. So. Oh, yeah, the Celts.
Yeah. It's the English, isn't it? Early British. Brits. Yeah.
Ancient British, not English.
British, yeah. Oh, my bad.
Let's blame everybody, not just the English.
Do you have fun painting them because they have balls?
They paint the naked figures.
Did you give any naked figures?
One or two I had were naked. I don't know. I'm not sure where they are, but yeah.
Yeah.
At least the ones he's got at the moment have all got trousers on, and that's about it.
Yeah. Let's see.
Hey.
And they're missing spears at the moment because somebody hasn't ordered them yet.
No, that's okay, mate. I'll order them next week. new line designs.
Oh, they're good. They're good.
Yeah. Well, the Persians are theirs. I need a few shields, the hoplite shields.
Right.
For the Cardax, however you pronounce it. So I thought, well, I'll order a lot of spears for the ancient British at the same time. So, yes, I had a chat with him just before Christmas. Said, you know, if I put an order in, I'll have a couple of packs of those. So they should be winging their way to me. That and some awesome. The large Peltas shields they do.
Have you spoken? If I'd known, because they have the postage is 10%.
Is it 10%?
But there doesn't seem to be a limit on it.
Yeah,
really.
So I was looking to buy an army, But when you're getting up to, and some bits for David, when you get to about £130 worth, and they want to charge you £13 postage, you're thinking, that's a bit excessive somewhere.
Isn't that 10%?
It is 10%, but £13 posts a lot more than what the figure's weight is.
Oh, I see. They should be able to re-invoice on those ones, though. They might.
Well, I haven't placed the order yet, so if you want something, let me know. And
I'll send him an email next week sometime, or this week sometime.
Yeah, well, let me know, and I'll put it all in one order.
Yeah, because the sale's not onto the 3rd, is it?
That's right.
Yeah.
Oh, is that when the sale starts, the 3rd?
Yeah, the 3rd, yeah.
So may as well do it all in one go.
Because I was going to say, when you're talking about postage, they're a British company. I looked them up where they're at now. They're over in Buckinghamshire.
They are, yes.
That's why Andy's so shocked about the post.
I was going to say, I'd be shocked too. I pay less than that for things coming from Britain for me.
Yeah, a lot of people, they cap the postage at a certain point. You know, I bought figures recently where £50 and you get free postage over that. But New Line's just open-ended.
Why don't you send them an email and ask them about it?
I'm going to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cause, I mean, that would be a shame for them to, because what you can then do is just, well, no, it wouldn't work that way either. You don't save it there.
Yeah. Huh. Well, he sounded pretty reasonable when I spoke to him last, so I'm sure he could do something.
Most manufacturers are reasonable. Most of these guys are. Yeah. I mean, they're all
decent. Well, they know who you are. Somebody will buy loads of stuff from them if you're happy with them. You know?
Yeah. Well, that's the nice thing about the hobby. It's we have a tendency, we may be butterflies, but we'll come back to manufacturers we like and get stuff from them and use the same people over and over again. So, and it's a small community. So, Colin, what was the last game you did?
Oh, darn. I guess the spotlight's on me. ouch.
He's got being bit by a little girl.
I actually think, probably am. No, I'd say Pony Wars, Yellow Ribbon.
Yellow Ribbon.
American Wars Against Native Americans. So, yeah, 15 millimeter Blue Moon, minifigs, like a whole bunch of other manufacturers like that.
Oh.
Don't worry, she's not having any of the water.
No water for Blair.
Yeah. Definitely some wicked fun, definitely in solo, because especially out here in California, we still can't play that much and get out. Everything's pretty much still on lockdown.
We are as well.
Yeah, you're on a UK-style lockdown right now, Colin.
Yeah.
Oh, yep. Okay.
Depends which tier you're in. We got four tiers. And we're in tier two, so we're not actually that bad compared with tier four.
Yeah, but in tier two, you're still completely restricted from doing anything.
Mm-hmm. We can play in the garden in the summer.
There you go.
Yeah. In our English summer. Yeah.
I was going to say, 1 week in May.
Yeah. Well,
if we are lucky.
We'll make it an all day game.
Yeah. What about the Pony Wars? Have you heard any more about those? They were after 1,500 folks, weren't they?
Yeah, they're gonna produce. They're gonna go ahead and produce anyway. They didn't have that many as many people sign up. Peter said that they're in the final stages of layout and it's almost ready for the printer.
Brilliant.
It's going to printer. They look, I mean, the pictures he's posted look great. So
where are they posted? On his Facebook.
Facebook. And on the Bacchus forum.
Yes, yeah. I'll have a look.
I'll have a look.
Yeah. Sorry, because I think last time I looked at the link, they only had about 250 subscribers.
It's not much more than that. See, Pony Wars is it's a neat, definitely a niche game. It made a lot of rounds back in the 80s, but it never survived, and it never got across the pond. Never got over to the U.S. So most folks in the U.S. have never heard of it. So you know he's not going to get a huge of uptake because it's usually old folks, and
Colin,
yeah.
You know, people who are who are really interested in that period. So
yeah, and there was only a very brief mention on TMP for them. I only saw. I don't know whether they actually subscribe to the trader on TMP. Otherwise, you can't advertise your wares there.
Yeah, well, we won't go into that one. I have not been on the TMP in months.
I go on about one. I used to go on there every day, but now I've gone about once every 2 weeks, once a month, not very frequently.
Yeah, I just got put off by all the
moderation.
Lack of moderation. Was probably a bit of it, but
no, I think it's more selective moderation. I think is
lack of. Yeah, that's just it. I've been doghouse. I was doghouse multiple times there. And it was for things like pointing out where somebody has insulted somebody. I'll point out and say, that's rather rude. You were very rude to do that. Don't. And I got doghouse for calling somebody rude for being rude to somebody else.
Sounds about right.
Yeah, and it was. There's a couple manufacturers that I will never buy from. I don't care how good of a figure there is, how good of a sale there is, just because of their behavior on the miniatures page. Period.
Good. At the end of the day, we were just talking about that with that last supplier about the spears. You've got to keep your audience engaged and happy. You can't piss off your people that are buying because you will never go back to them.
Well, it's one thing to have an opinion, a political opinion about something. It's another to deride and insult people for either viewing things differently or versing an alternative opinion. And, when people have expressed their opinion, that their opinion is fact and nothing else matters, I have a problem with that. And that and hypocrisy, but, that's just me. Yeah.
So what was your last game, Gary?
My last game was Saber Squadron. We did Chinese versus U.S. Marines, modern Chinese.
One 300th or
yeah.
Is it bigger than that?
Yeah. I used GHQ 1/285th scale. We had we had a 6x8 board. We had two players aside, Chinese amphibious tanks, the ZTD 505s and ZBD 05s. With infantry in that, making an amphibious landing against an area that was defended by U.S. Marines. And the Chinese had air superiority, which I run it. I very seldom play. I usually run the games. They bungled it so bad. They should have won the game hands down. And they lined up in mass and just went straight forward. And the Marines didn't do much better. It was the only thing different was the Chinese did not call in their airstrikes. They just didn't call them.
And I said, was that a choice or a bad roll in?
No, but out of choice. I said, you guys want to use it? There's a phase where you said, do you want to do your airstrike? And they said, no, we don't have a good target. You have plenty of targets.
Just pick something.
So they had drones. They had better visibility than the Marines. They had better intelligence than the Marines did. The whole purpose of the game was to, because my players are almost all active duty Marines when I run a game.
Oh, do you?
Yeah. So. A lot of these kids, a bit to get them to think a little bit outside the box on this is what they may face was kind of the intent behind that game. I had one of the active duty Marines played the half the Chinese, and a civilian played the other half the Chinese, and they just lined them up and waved ashore. And when they did do their run, they ran it right over the only air defense unit the Marines had. And, the Marines had three Avengers, which are they're mounted on Humvees, but they have multiple SAMs that they can fire off. And a lone Chinese jet flew right over top of them, not even naming them as a target, but a target. Plane never got anywhere close to its bombing run before it got taken out. They didn't call in their helicopters. They had helicopter support. They didn't use them. Two Marine Osprey with a Marine infantry platoon came flying over the Chinese positions to land the Marine, land Marine reinforcements. Chinese never opened fire. They didn't use any. They didn't let them fly over.
Yeah, that's very good of them.
So, yeah, it was. I have to say, one of the active duty Marines who played the Chinese is a 40K player, and. Was thinking of it as trying to run it as 40K, so that kind of changed it a bit. But
yes.
So was this recently? Then your lockdown is different, or your tiers?
3 weeks ago.
So you're still able to meet up then?
Yeah, we've actually come out of a more restrictive lockdown. We had it where you couldn't meet, you couldn't be whatever. Now restaurants are allowed 50% capacity. Shops like, you know, like Hobby Chest here in Jacksonville, we can have six players at a table, provided that they're spaced, you know, because the tables are 4x8. So we can have, you know, every couple feet around. So six players max. We only ran it with four and myself. So there is some limitations on it. Oh, and you have to wear a mask everywhere.
Yeah.
But excuse
me. How are they coping in America then if you haven't got any medical insurance?
Unfortunately, at this point, the topic descended into politics. We will resume talking wargaming in a moment. Guys, we're supposed to be talking about wargaming.
Well,
sorry.
Yes, it's a subject that affects wargaming quite well.
Oh, it does. Money. The lack of.
Is that the original Space Hulk behind you, Simon?
Unfortunately, yes, it is. Yes.
Oh, my.
Yeah, it's a real old one, that is.
Yeah.
Oh, have you moved your shelves around, Simon, as well?
There Look at that. The original Space Hulk.
Wow.
Blimey.
I know.
30, 35 years? 30 years. Yeah.
I think the dust on it is that old as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a few old ones up there. Yeah. And then on the other side is Bloodbath at Orc's Drift. What was the other one?
Oh, Orc's Drift. Oh, God. Yeah.
The Dwarven Kings, Battle Cars, and then Warhammer, the rules. You know, remember those rules?
Yeah. The silver and black books. Yeah.
Is that number two? Is that third edition?
That's first edition.
First edition was like that.
Oh, yeah.
Wow. 1982.
Yeah.
Old beggar.
That's got I think there's three books in there. Which are
the three black books?
Yeah, black and silver, aren't they? Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah, now those I recognize.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They came
I've got that figure as a miniature as well.
Yeah, I foolishly sold them, like so many other things I've sold over the years.
And you can never keep hold of anything.
I have to. Well, I've never been rich, so I've had to sell stuff to fund new games. So
I'm just.
Why do you think you got two kidneys? Come on.
Yeah. Yeah.
Please.
Oh yes.
Now the games. I had started collecting wargaming stuff when I was a young. We were to be looking at 1970, 71. And everything from the original first edition D&D, all that stuff. And when I left for the Marines, I had all my collection of figures boxed up in a chest of drawers that we had down in our basement of my plant parents' place. They threw it all out. Every bit of it.
Yeah,
oh dear.
Because they figured.
Sue him?
Sorry, can I sue him?
Wasn't that chap in America sued his parents?
Yeah, no. Wargaming, you know, it's one thing to sue your parents for throwing out your porn collection. It's another thing to throw out your wargaming collection.
Yeah,
Judges can sympathize with porn. They don't sympathize with wargaming.
You'd be too embarrassed to go to court about wargaming.
I think I've got an old book somewhere as well. I'll see if I can find it.
For any people who wind up listening to this, there was a recent court case in the United States where a guy sued his parents for throwing out his collection of vintage pornography that he had collected, and he won his case, and his parents have to pay him $25,000.
Yeah.
So
seriously,
yeah. It's a real case.
Yeah.
Of course, it was Florida.
He was there. His parents were his landlord. And whilst they had the ability to do certain things whilst being his landlord, destroy his property wasn't one of them.
Do you remember this book?
Oh, my goodness.
Do you remember that?
Yeah.
Now, that was my first introduction to Second World War games.
Really?
My brother and I used to play that. Oh, flipping heck.
Those are Rocco mini tanks on the front, painted, aren't they?
Are they? They could be. I'm not sure, actually.
Right. Oh, my God.
I had a collection of Rocco.
shows you how old the book is. It was a pound. So they were the first set of Operation Warboard, it is, for folks who are just listening in. And yeah, they're by Gavin and Bernard Lyle Blumenek. And yeah, we used to play that, he and I, with Airfix figures.
And what's the publication date?
Tanks.
What's the publication date?
The publication date was 1976.
Yeah.
Oh, my giddy aunt. But the book's that old, it's yellow.
Those were good times.
They were the first set of rules I ever used for anything other than Dungeons and Dragons.
The very first set of rules I ever bought were a set of rules called Tractics. And I still have the box. That's one I don't know. I found that one somewhere. And I don't know. I don't think it's the original one I bought, but I still have a copy of it. But Tractics was done by TSR, same people who published Dungeons and Dragons. It was a 4-book set, came in a box just like the Dungeons and Dragons, you know, the A4 type paper stapled in the middle and folded over a cardboard cover. And you had 40 or 50 charts with it. And the angle of the shell penetration had to be determined. And the, you know, how high up you were over the target, down angle and all that. And then you had all these computations you had to do and extremely detailed. And where did the shot penetrate on the tank? You know, did it take out the entire crew compartment or did it just the driver? Did it penetrate the, you know, really super detailed rules. I still have them. Those and Tactica, medieval rules.
Oh, yeah, Tactica. I remember Tactica. Yes.
I still got a copy of those.
When you were doing a round of shooting in that game, is it like a set of modifiers that you run through? Or how does you declare your shot sort of go through a turn with that game?
You declare your shot. You run down, like, for instance, if I remember, they're in the storage or they're in the attic, so I'm not going to grab them out right now. But you run your shot. You go down the left side. First of all, you range. You go down the left side, determine range, and the right side, the top to determine type of round or vice versa. And you kind of found where they met, and that was the number you needed to hit. Then you added to that number, subtracted any type of movement, any type of fog, smoke, cover, rain, you know, weather, skill, crew skill quality, all that stuff. And that was
that's to hit.
To hit.
Yeah.
Once you checked your hit, boom, you got your hit. Then you had to take your protractor, determine the angle of the shot. And if it was within this band, and what type of round of ammunition did you use? Did you use high explosive anti-tank? Did you use a APC, AP, whatever type of round you did? Was it HE? What type of armor? What was the armor thickness? What was the slope of the armor that was being hit and at what angle you were hitting it at, et cetera? And then once you had those all calculated on the different trays, you rolled to see if you penetrate.
I thought Challenger was bad.
And then Challenger was designed to be a simplification of Tractics.
Did it? Oh, blimey. Challenger was bad enough.
I still have Challenger.
Yeah, I've got the little battles book they did, but I didn't keep the rules anymore.
So it was a turn of night then?
Well, you would go over. When I first started, it was a guy by the name of Bruce Miller and John Bowen were the two guys who, over here in the States, I'd game with. We had the formal games and they were older than I, you know, they were like 18, 19 years old and I was 10 years old. So, you know, they were like, yeah, I had to have this little punk with us, whatever, but they had, they would run through it and they were always the two main guys and you would wind up seeing, we'd have a turn where everybody moved, then the firing, and then we'd break for lunch. Then we'd come back, do another turn. And then everybody have grab a can of pop or something. Then they'd have another turn. Then it'd be dinner time. And then it was like, I won. No, you won. No, you know, I won. And they argued about who won. And then it was time to go home. So
you did about two turns.
That was about it. But so, yeah, that was my experience there. So.
Yep. Mind you, there was a lot of rules like that earlier on. WRG produced a lot. We used to try and play Curcio, which I liked, but that's all tables.
Yeah.
There was a big genre, if you like, of all the rule sets were very detailed at that point. I mean, the Bruce Quarry Napoleonic rules, they were quite detailed.
Bruce Quarry, I don't know. What was the title of them? I don't remember the names.
Hang on, then I'll bring that one out.
Yeah, but my first set of rules were a set of modern rules. They were about four sides of A4. I picked them up at a wargame show in Ipswich. This chap had put together this modern game, absolutely fantastic terrain, you know, with it must have been Heroic Ross figures back then.
Okay, yeah.
And it was beautiful. I remember it. And yeah, he'd had homemade rules. And he was selling them something like, you know, 10p for photocopied four sides of A4.
Did they play well?
Yeah, they were quite, you know, there back you then when I was, you know, when you're in your teens and you first started playing, yeah, they were fine. Yeah, very simple rules. But you probably get a game in the morning rather than a turn in the morning.
And see, that's the way, you know, they probably abstracted a lot or took a lot. And that's been the kind of the pattern over the years is you go to a simplification where things got too simple that it wound up being just unbelievable. And then they've gone into an area where they're now abstracting. It's more become an abstraction where they're more about giving you the believable results. And it's become less about the equipment and more about the people in a game.
Yes,
if you think about it. So, and I think I like that approach.
See, I found that when you're making rules too simple, it makes both armies seem the same.
Yeah.
You don't have a feel for how different they are. And when it gets to just Army A versus Army B, that's then when I start to get bored, because if the armies are the same, we're just rolling dice then. Why don't we just play Yahtzee?
I never could figure out that game. Yahtzee's too complex for me. So, but now when we talk about Napoleonic games, I'm a big fan of Blucher. I love Blucher rules because I like that for Napoleonics. I like that army group level, that big wide out, spread out, you know, where you're commanding, you're actually commanding an army. And I don't care about which battalion or regiment gets into a square where they're in line. I'm compared more about the grand tactical aspect of it. And so Blucher, I think, does a good job abstracting. But if you set up your forces wrong in that game, for instance, if you give, you know, if you don't take an account, if you give everybody the same type of Elan, every type of saint, then you become that. It's there is no difference between the armies. It's all about how you set the game up. You have to set it up right in the beginning in order to capture the differences between the armies. And if you don't do that, then it's just two of the same army. You might as well have two French fighting French.
Yeah, we played Austerlitz, didn't we, with Blücher?
Yeah.
And we
wasn't that pre-set up, though? That was a fixed setup, wasn't it?
To a degree. It marks on the map where the different corps are, but you can then... No, that is pre-set up. Everything was in its place, wasn't it?
It was,
every single unit was...
It was all set up. I get the feeling that the DBA, DBM system could be a bit like that, because there are their blades, spears, Saloi. You know, they're all very similar.
Right.
So if you set them up, blades against blades, they're just going to keep bouncing all night.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I suppose you've got to be a bit careful how you do it. Otherwise, it could just be a load, as you suggest, Matt, a load of dice. And what's the point?
Yeah.
Well, only one in DBA, but I get your point. But
a load of rolling that one die again.
Yeah,
and again.
But the advantage of that is that you tend to get results still in quite a short period of time. But if the plan is to play a campaign utilizing a set of rules, then we can play the games and move on, and you get a very defined victory or not.
Well, when it's attacker versus defender, essentially the defender wins if the attacker can't penetrate. So
not all the time. There are a few little nuances, but but as Gary said, they DBA is probably one of the biggest abstract games out there for troop types.
Well, one of the things I found, you know, we'd go back to the old war game research group, or you go even to like Hail Caesar, you know, now going to these different types of rule sets. And I'm not, I don't play DBM, DBA, DBM, DBX, any of those. So I can't comment on them, but they have it set up where you can have Babylonians fighting Imperial Romans, or ancient Egyptians. You know, you could just pull an army, base it on points, and off you go. But without taking account the technology differences between bronze and steel, or, you know, that type of, you know, type of variations. Yeah. And that's
one of the, all that, you know, yeah, all the military.
Go ahead. What you can say, Andy?
Sorry, you say that's everything, isn't it? You know, the pull power on a bow and all that sort of stuff all changed over the centuries.
Right. So you got to take that into account. Now, what was that? I have it. Oh, right there.
Meg?
Meg. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mortem et Glorium. He's got, have you guys tried those rules yet?
No, we haven't, no.
I've read through them. I haven't played a game yet. They read really well. They read really well. But what he's done, I like, is here are the armies that fought each other. And they're designed, you know, so they give you that right up front. So you don't start setting really crazy, you know, he takes into account the periods, the technology, and confines your list. So you're staying within your, you know, possible fighters, you know, possible. And if you want to go a little bit crazy and you'll do an imaginations type thing from ancient, it still, he gives you within the time frame. So you're fighting the same technologies. Or, you know, technologies that were actually in play at the same time, which I like that. I think that's a good approach.
If you look at DBA, DBM, DBMM, and that, every army has its opponents, its enemies listed underneath the army. So you have the ability to fight historical opponents, and they have sort of broken the rules down into four distinct periods as well to help things where roughly the same technology appears in the same book.
Right. Well, that's good. That's kind of what you want.
I think they're biblical, classical, and then it's early and late medieval, isn't it?
Yes, well, yeah.
I think it's around about that.
Yeah.
Well, there's a lot of work gone into the army lists. Blooming heck. Phil Barker?
Yes, yeah.
Yeah. I must have spent an eternity researching them.
Well, not only do they research the armies, they sort of justify why they've classified certain troops as, you know, the troops may have been armed with pike, but because of the way they fought, they you know, called them auxiliaries.
Interesting.
And things like that. So there's a lot of thoughts going into it as well. Yeah.
And there's some very obscure troop, regional troop types or regional armies. And you think,
I like obscure. Obscure's good.
And then you look at it and think, where on earth did they come from?
Oh, yeah. Is it the black sheep and the white sheep? Well, they not Turkoman, some like Timmerman or something. They're two of the armies.
I'm not heard of them.
No. They're in the books, you think?
What? Who?
Yeah.
Colin, when we had Simon on the show, what did he say about, because he's a tournament gamer, isn't he? Didn't he talk about tournament gamings?
Yeah.
So he came from DBM, DBA background. Do you remember?
Not much. I have the memory of the squirrel.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know.
a squirrel's quite good when it comes to nuts, anyway.
No, I can't find it. So.
Well, after 3 days.
It's selective memories.
Yeah.
At least, Colin, you can remember where your nuts are. That's quite handy.
Yeah.
Half the time, yeah. No, I actually can stun you guys, and you should probably call the ambulances before I tell you guys this. But the first rule set I ever read through were the first Lord of the Rings rules back in, 2001.
Blimey.
Yeah.
Well, you got to remember.
The strategy battle game, whatever it was called.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the one from Games Workshop at the time, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Did you ever play it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I never played that one.
Yeah, we even played it. We Oh gosh, we had a when we had the house at Adderley, up in the attic, we set up a good sized table there, and we who came over? Simon or not Simon? Yeah. Stan.
Stan and Neil. And Callum came over. I know him. Stan's son.
Callum. Oh, yeah, Callum. Yeah, that's right. And we had a game up there. And then I think we had a couple games at the club.
I don't think we did.
No? I'm pretty sure we did. Or maybe you were in school and couldn't come because it was Wednesday night.
I can't remember. Andy used to have some of the Lord of the Rings figures, didn't you?
Me, I've still got them. I've got a box full of them. Yeah.
Every army from the original set, we've got them.
Yeah.
So they're just over there. Yeah, we got tons of them. Not painted, but we got tons of them.
They're worth a penny.
Yeah.
I bought the majority of mine painted off eBay because they were cheap.
Ah, there you go. That's a good way to do it.
There were so many of them out there.
Yeah. Well, I've got... what was that, Simon?
I bet they're not cheap now.
Yeah. Well, I've got a whole bunch of broken Uruk-hai spears. Those huge Uruk-hai pikemen, those things broke. Like So I got to figure out a way to fix those before we put them back out there.
So that's the whole plastic versus metal controversy for pikemen. Yes, you have plastic, which is nice. You don't stab yourself trying to pick them up, but they break off. Whereas metal, you're going to stab yourself and probably have holes in your hand by the end of the day.
When I was at Aylesbury War Games Club, there was a chap there had a it must have been Macedonian army, and the pike were made of piano wire. And the way to get into the box was to go in from the top into the box directly onto these pike, and he preferred you not to pick them up by the pike.
Just like shimmy round, didn't he?
Hand them the box and say, you do it.
Yeah. They were horrendous. And even when you're playing with them on the table, you go to put your hand across them and accidentally catch them. Oh, blimey, they hurt.
I replaced a bunch of the Warlord Games, English Civil War pikemen with metal pike. And I don't remember who does. Was it Foundry that does it with the little point at the top even?
Yes, I got some of those. Yeah. The brass ones. Yeah.
Yeah. I replaced all the pikes on all the pikes with the uprights with that. Now, the ones that were in the holding position, I didn't replace those because those don't seem to break as much as the upright ones do. So I replaced all the upright ones. And every time I've brought them out, somebody has brought their hand out with a pikeman holding hanging off of it, stuck in their hand. So,
That must be a labor of love for somebody, though, because somebody must tap out every single one of those heads on those spears and pike to make them into a leaf shape.
That's right.
Yeah.
I'm sure they have some sort of press.
I just imagine they're every night watching telly, tapping away.
Next.
That's 5,620.
Yeah.
Oh, man. All right. So, hey, guys, I got to ask, since we're at the end of 2020, we all know the lowlights of 2020. What were some good things? Anything good came out of 2020?
Well, gaming-wise, we moved into David's shed in his garden. He had a 5.5 by 3.5 meter shed put in his garden, and he's got he can put a 10-foot by 6-foot table in there.
Really?
Yeah. And we played Napoleonic's, the Battle of Helsburg, and because it was in his garden, we could leave it up, and we played it over about
3 weeks.
About 3 weeks, we played it. Three or four. The 3 weeks it was. 3 weeks in the end. Yeah.
3 weeks.
Yeah. But it
just
was
felt
great.
Like four.
Yeah, to be able to leave the game set up for that period of time. You know, when we're at the club, you play for 3 hours, and it's inconclusive, and you put it all away. But you can fight these. You know, looked absolutely fantastic. Yeah, I think we posted a few pictures to the group on the WhatsApp, and you can see the size of the game.
That was that the game that we had that random setup on? No. That was the next game we did the all day was the Warmaster massive game we did.
It was the Warmaster game we played. Yeah, 4,000 points aside. Yeah,
that was that's my highlight of the year of the game, and because I just loved that we were all. It was the random setup that was so good about it, because quite a lot of our games we seem to have a line and then they have a line and you move forward, and because the games are so short because of time, you sort of just do that. I go forward, you go forward, I go forward, you go forward, and eventually just hit in the middle. Whereas for that War Master game, because we had unlimited time on it, we were able to do that random setup, and that just showed, it made the battle flow so much better. I mean, I was talking to Simon about it after some of the games in part of our debriefs, and it was just so good to talk about, well, if I move my winches over there, they're going to be pushed over this way. And you'll never get that feeling over a three-hour game.
No. That is a good thing about a day with Shed and being able to play those longer games and leaving them set up.
Yeah. When you have your own space, it makes the world of difference.
Oh, it does.
So I know a lot of the folks in America won't understand that. A lot of them, like me, I've got a 4x8 foot table right behind me that I can set up and leave a game up and let it collect dust if I want to. We have that ability, but a lot of the folks in Europe, there's just not the space to get away with that. Then you got Andy Collier, who he has the space. He's got it set up now. He's got a nice setup. I admire his setup. So
yeah, it is good.
He's done a nice job. What about you, Simon? What's the highlight? What's the best part? What have you seen positive come out of 2020? Whether for your gaming, wargaming, anything?
Yeah, I agree with the other two. Really, being able to set a game up and leave it was a big bonus. Yeah, and I suppose because of obviously the COVID problems, it gave us the impetus to move into Dave's shed and at least try and get a game organized while we could. So that was good.
Yeah.
And actually sitting here doing a bit of painting and saying, right, I'm going to get something done. And of course, when you can't go anywhere, you run out of excuses not to do it.
I don't believe you're painting because you're not wearing magnifying glasses.
Oh, well, that's true. Yes. Yeah. Unfortunately, I do have a set of glasses I have to use, but
I've got a pair like those too. So
don't we all? Yeah.
Yeah. Unfortunately,
Colin does.
My glasses aren't are nowhere near as posh as those sets. Blimey, heck. No.
They're mine were quid from Lidl or somewhere.
These are only about eight quid or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. I fall in really the same cheap category as Andy. A pound.
Have you even got a light on them?
Yeah, I've got the same one. They're just, way out of reach. Hang on. I'll rip my computer out. I won't do that. I've got a tether on my headset. I could probably take my headset off. But I've got the same ones you do, Matt. And, the ones with the interchangeable lenses, they got a little pop-up there.
I just have an overhead light. And that's it.
I got my daylight lamp. I got all
sorts. Have you even got all the lenses?
Yep.
Same thing. They dead flies on it, Simon?
No, they're not dead flies. That's where I've hit it with the brush while I've been painting.
Yeah. Mine's the same. They got all bits of paint on the bulb, yeah.
That's right.
Daylight bulb on mine, so.
I do have a light overhead as well, so it's, mine.
Yeah, yeah. So, you have to send me a link, Matt, to those glasses.
All right, hold on.
Yeah, they're not expensive. They're really not. And the nice thing is you can change the lenses on them for the strength
as you get older. Yeah.
I was gonna say as you
more get detail. To small detail.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I'm always and again my painting. For me, 2020, the highlight of my painting is the number of Russians that have been gotten painted in 6mm. Now, Colin painted them all, but that's a highlight for me. Somebody else got those painting done.
Working from home, I was able to do all the cavalry for all the Russians in Leipzig. It's not so easy.
Yeah, we've talked about it, the Leipzig project.
Yeah, when I work from home, my work expect me to actually do contracting stuff. I think they'd get upset if I sat there and painted toy soldiers.
Oh.
So I work for the U.S. government. If I work from home, like, we don't do anything.
No? I'm in the wrong job.
Yeah.
May have to edit that bit.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. No. I suppose another highlight was actually, because there's just a smaller group of us that could meet because of the restrictions, you said, well, okay, what are we going to do to try and keep get some kind of campaign going or new sets of rules and resurrecting, you know, DBA, DBM, which we haven't played for 20 years.
Or at least, yeah.
I had never played it before we played it on that game, so...
You know. Yeah, the last time we played them, Colin wasn't born.
So I've painted three DBA armies. Oh, we'll hop around there somewhere.
There you go. We're here.
Yeah, I've painted three DBA armies. What was that Renaissance game we played? Blimey. Yeah. It was Italian Wars. Yeah, the Italian Wars game we played.
Trying to think of the rules. Blooming hell, nearly. begins with E. Flipping heck. I want to say impresario, something silly like that.
It wasn't impetus, was it? No, it wasn't impetus.
No, it was a very
good lie.
Anyway, we played this game. I must have painted about 250 Renaissance figures. Furioso. Yeah, Furioso, yes.
Furioso begins with I. What a muppet. Oh, well.
Oh, man.
Was that the one where we were rolling at the beginning to see if the unit would the units moved in initiative order?
Correct, yes.
Yeah.
So that's what he was thinking of, because he's thinking of those impetuous units that you'd get a 6+ on, and they would always go first, and you wouldn't lose your initiative order. They would just keep going until they hit the enemy.
That's it, the Swiss and the French, yeah.
Yes, yeah. That's it, mate. You try and make me feel better. Yeah, and what we were able to resurrect some figures we'd had again 20 odd years ago or more.
Yeah,
you know, gladiator Renaissance figures I'd got, and trying to just touch them up, and you know, they were part painted then and finish them off. In fact, and they're still hanging around here. Look,
there you go. Still part painted.
There we go.
There you
go. Still part painted. Still haven't finished them.
So the next thing we need to do is BattleTech.
Oh, I
think he's just trying to wind me up then. about three years now, I sold all my BattleTech, about 80 mechs, and we haven't played it for ages. And we were going to,
haven't played it for ages.
And we were going to, when we were doing the Samurai, was it when we first sort of contemplated doing 28mm Samurai?
Yeah,
so I sold it all and all my epic 40k. And then about 2 months after I'd sold it, Kev says, oh, there's a new set of
BattleTech
rules out. We should play that. I think, oh, for God's sake. I just got rid of it all.
That was, it's like me, last summer, summer of 2019, or spring of 2019, somewhere around the 2019, I got rid of all my 28mm Romans. Sold them off just because I was going to do 6mm for large battles. Everything large battles can be 6mm, 28mm can be skirmish.
It's not just Romans, those Celts, Gauls, like
everything.
The whole bank. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, everything. Wow. And Infamy comes out this year, which is 28mm, or which is Roman skirmish. I'm thinking,
away.
Yeah, but I'm not. Colin and I have a mantra: just because of the lead pile is so big, no new periods, no new scales. So,
that's what we have, and it doesn't make any difference.
There's a way to justify it.
Some people are just weak-willed.
Simon, how much stuff have you bought?
Fortunately, this year, not a lot.
Yeah. Yeah, this year's been really good on the Wargaming budget. That's been a highlight. The Wargaming budget has...
I've been able to rein it in.
Yeah.
I've spent more trying to keep old cars on the road.
I think I've done the opposite this year.
Have you bought a lot more? What have you bought?
Oh, I've got loads of 40k.
Yeah, again,
that drains resources. that drains resources somewhat.
Yeah, well, that's expensive stuff.
So, yeah.
I haven't picked up 40K in 30 years, easily.
No.
Haven't touched it.
But me and Dave play Kill Team from time to time.
Okay. Yeah. Well, that's like that skirmish one, right, with about 5-10 figures aside.
Yeah.
That's okay.
I prefer Infinity. But we haven't really managed to do much on that, have we, Matt? I bought some buildings I've made some buildings for Infinity. But yeah, we haven't done a lot.
Do you guys remember? Yeah, and one of the things I remember about the Telford Club is always getting ready to start a campaign.
Yeah,
not doing it, not running, but getting ready to start it. But
summarize.
I was going through my. I was going through the storage unit today, gathering up. I found a buyer for all of my Wild West and all of my Gladiator stuff that I'm going to sell off. And found a buyer who's going to get a good price so I can get rid of that stuff and get more storage space. But I was going through our storage facility looking to see any odds and ends. And I found a bunch, about 5 40-millimeter Samurai figures from Steve Barber Miniatures.
Yes.
Remember, that was the 2005 campaign that Kevin was going to start.
Wait, when were you going to go for 40 millimeter?
That was
we mentioned 40 millimeter recently with the die show rules.
Yeah.
But that was 2005 was the first time.
Yeah.
Blimmin' heck. Yeah, we dug them all out. They were on the
hexagonal basis.
Hexagon, yeah.
Yep. So I dug I found a bunch of those, and I thought, oh man, and I shook my head. Cause there's, that's the one thing I remember about the club is everybody's wanting to start a campaign, but we never get anywhere getting it going.
True.
No, we had lots of those. I'm just going to decamp for a minute downstairs.
Go for it.
We do excel at those. Next time you come over to England, then you'll have to bring them with you.
Yeah. And sell them off. Yeah. or wave them at Kevin and saying, when?
Yeah.
Well, he did make some progress on his game rules, he said, didn't he?
He's done them all.
We had a set of rules. I can't remember whether he wrote them or they were a off-the-shelf set. But we had a few games with them. Russell used to organize a few.
Yeah.
I built some internal screens for buildings out of rice paper and put a frame around them to so we could do, you know, fighting inside geisha the buildings.
Oh, okay. That would have been
We did play something, didn't we? Cause I remember we did one with who's that chap who joined us from Wolverhampton Way?
Oh, yes.
He came, he was the you were the ninja, weren't you, or something in the game we played?
Yeah, you talk about that one game we played where we did that massive scenario.
Yeah.
I built the screens with a bolt with rice paper in the center, about 3 inches high, and balsa wood framing all the way around them. And then after about 6 months, they all went into twist. So the whole thing looked like bananas now.
Humidity. So
they're all still in a box. I keep looking and thinking, am I going to straighten those up?
you get a steam kettle, straighten them that way, and then put books on top of them.
Oh yes, yeah.
So
I've got to do something, yeah. And the slaughter bases he used to get for when they used to hold. You remember the slaughter bases with the holes in for figures, but you could also get ones for cards that so they sat upright. They have like a channel in them.
I used
those and stuck them either side of it just to get them to stand up. No, not anymore. They're all over the place.
Yeah.
2005. Blooming heck.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're scary.
Still found
nice
those.
Nice figures, though.
They're beautiful figures.
They are very nice. And they're still available.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, Steve Barber does a wonderful job. He really does on all those stuff. I just recently got some of his World War I German cavalry sent to me. And they're beautiful. Just
what scale is that?
28 millimeter.
Yeah.
Just outstanding figures there. So love those. But So now let's talk about 2021. What are the plans for 2021? And don't tell me what campaign you're going to start.
Because I wanted to start with that.
We are. I've got a campaign based around the Mediterranean. I've got the whole, it's about 18 pages the rules run to for the campaign. Everybody is busily painting up their armies.
Yeah, you know.
Yeah, for some reason, Matt's doing ancient Britons who were on holiday in the south of France, I think, for this campaign.
Are they going to put the towels on the beach chairs, though?
Probably. Yeah, that's the Germans, isn't it? Yeah, Simon's doing Persians.
Persians.
Dave's painted up a Macedonians. I've got my Dacians, which are already painted, who might masquerade as somebody else. And then they could probably do probably be Thracians or something.
What scale? 28?
28, yeah. Yeah. And I've just bought a 28 mil Aventine miniatures, Republican Roman, DBA okay. Army. And I think I'm going to buy a 28 mil New Line Design Indian Army.
Oh, my.
Colorful.
Why don't you, what was that, Colin?
It's colorful, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, definitely. Why don't you guys ever think about 6mm or smaller scales?
I've just painted a 10mm Hungarian and a 10mm Indian, classical Indian army for DBA.
Okay. I like the small scales, just for the big arm.
We like them in every scale.
Yeah. But the when you've got an army of 400 figures of 28mm, that's a lot to lift in lead.
It is.
But whereas you take it in 6mm, I can carry that easily.
Yeah. So. Well, I've got saying that, I've got a 10mm US World War II army.
That's a good scale.
It is, but it's heavy. Every figure is on a steel base, and they're in two 4-liter boxes, but each 4-liter box has got sub trays in it. So and it does. It must weigh about 20-30 kilos just to pick up.
Yeah, it gets heavy fast. This is
But every single figure is painted, which is a novelty.
Yeah.
Well, I think the idea was if we went for DBA, we've all 28mm, we've already got them.
Right.
So let's not go buying a load of figures. We'll use what we've got, that old chestnut, and we'll stick with 28mm. And DBA rules, you only need 13 stands. And I've got 1, 2, 3, 5 done.
There you go.
Only 5. So, have you got your cavalry done?
No, I've got the odd figure, but not enough, really. So I'm failing badly. Is the polite way of putting it.
I thought you painted the whole load before when we did Wims, was that Battle at Wims?
Yeah, not Persians.
You had Persians, you painted Persians.
Yeah, but not enough. So it's okay. Here we go again, not enough. So, yes, it's like pulling teeth. So although that's the reason we went for 28, and it would be reasonably straightforward because we've got most of, semi-done. And I'm still messing around. So from that point of view, if COVID carries on for another 6 to 12 months, I might just finish.
Yeah. There you go. Good job.
Well, so that'll be a 2022 campaign then.
Yeah,
that's correct. That's right.
All right. I just finished a 28mm late medieval Polish army.
Oh, really?
Just finished painting that as well. Yeah.
Nice. Well, you're cranking out some painting.
Yeah. I try to get about an hour and a half every night.
Do you? Flipping it.
Good job.
No, I'm failing, because I've got the Teutonics to face them. And had them years and years and years, and they're still no good, even though they're under, all they need is white and black.
Yeah. And you can buy the transfer. You can buy the transfers in black as well.
There you go.
Yes, it'd be even easier. The figures I had were Testudo. A really big 28mm, over 30. I've got those compared to Essex, and they're like that. It's like, dear, what am I going to do?
All my Hungarians are Testudo. The majority of the rest of them are front rank.
Yeah. Nice figures. Yeah.
Yeah, because Testudo finished now. I don't think they're going anymore.
No, I couldn't find them. I couldn't find them to buy from anybody anymore.
I thought they sold up at one point, and then the people who bought them just never put them out.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Maybe. Yeah. That's a shame, really. They were nice figures. Well, they were big.
Yeah. I wanted, when I was going to buy this Indian army, I wanted to buy Vendel Indians because they did a lovely range. Unfortunately, they've all sold up. They sold them to some Americans, but apparently the mold needs redoing.
Okay.
And nobody wants to currently pay to get the mold redone.
That's not cheap.
No.
So,
what are they making it out of?
The mold, plastic?
No, the figures.
They're lead.
They're lead, yeah.
Yeah, well, an alloy metal.
Vendel.
Yeah.
Vendel are beautiful figures.
They were really nice. I remember that.
Yeah. They were along with, was it Griffin Beast, weren't they, at the time?
Yes. Yeah. Griffin Beast did some really nice figures.
Yeah,
well, all those companies now are going into plastics and putting out. So there's still some beautiful plastics coming out. So,
well, didn't Gripping Beast come out with some 10 millimeters? I think Parthian.
I thought they did it. They came out with a different scale.
I don't know. I can't remember seeing any.
A Gripping Beast, or was it?
I know Steve Barber did.
Barber did. He came out with some.
It's not 12 mil or something strange, is it?
Yeah, Parthians. Yeah, Parthians. Yeah. 10 millimeter, Gripping Beast.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right there. And Imperial Roman Legions.
Oh, okay. Oh, I didn't realize.
Yeah.
Great for warmer. Yeah.
Yeah.
We've got no excuse now, then.
No, none whatsoever. And let me see. Yeah. You get 30 for £5.
Oh, it's not bad.
Oh, right. They're nice sculpts too. Look at the pictures.
Oh yeah, Gripping Beast does do a nice job.
Yeah, they are nice.
They must be plastic.
Doesn't say.
No, I don't think so. No.
No.
No, there aren't many. There aren't many 10 mil plastics out there.
Did you see two things plastic or that the new Warlord Games has come out with their Epic scale, American Civil War in a box.
Yes.
And then Project Wargaming is releasing 6 millimeter samurai that the STL files, so you can print them yourself with either a resin or STL printer. And they're nice files. They really look good on that. So, but the going back to the Warlord Games, the Epic box, you get, was it 2,400 figures in a box, in the starter box? Each sprue has 100 infantry, a cannon, and a command figure. And they're saying they're 13.5 millimeters to the eye and 15 millimeter to the top of the head. That's pretty much in line with what Peter Pig does.
Yeah.
But there was a, do you remember how much they were charging for that, Colin?
Just over £171 was the discount.
Yeah.
That's a real good price for that many figures.
It must have been a promotion.
No, it's their. I've heard a couple podcasts where they've talked about it already. I forget which podcast it was on, but they're talking about American Civil War are figures that they don't make already. And they wanted to give a shot in the arm to their black powder rules. And so they went with, they decided to do these plastic screws in mass amounts. They're going to be releasing cavalry, Zouaves, Iron Brigade in various box sets coming out. And each sprue contains 100 figures on it. So I mean, and if you go to like the War Games Illustrated magazine for January edition, has a sample sprue attached to it.
I was going to say I was going to go downtown and see if they had it in stock.
Yeah,
to see if I have a look at them.
Everybody says that the early discussions on them are positive, I'm just curious to see. I'm going to be curious to see what they look like. I am not. I've got so many thousand. How many thousand GHQ 10 millimeter do we have, Colin?
Heavens, don't ask me.
We got a few thousand GHQ 10 millimeter ACW. I mean, yeah, we can do Gettysburg. No worries whatsoever.
Yeah, I've got about 200 bases of Union in 15 mil.
Yeah.
Mine are 15 mil Peter Pig.
Yeah, so they may fit in, so it might be something to fill in. Yeah, but they're
filling the packet.
Yeah.
So, you know, I do have them.
Yeah, the trouble is you can't – all mine are based for Fire and Fury, and these ones, will because they're all joined at the shoulder, you can't use them as individual figures.
So are they joined at the shoulder? I haven't seen a picture of them yet.
Yeah, it looked like it from the picture.
It did.
Yeah, they're joined at the shoulder.
Oh, that'd be a shame because they're on strips of 10.
Yeah.
Yeah, something like that. I'll be back in 2 minutes.
Yeah, no worries. Now we can talk about them.
Oh.
So who's got the most embarrassing Simon story of the year?
I've just opened a new beer.
There you go.
It's called that. Oh, if you see that.
Santa's Little Helper or Santa's New Helper?
Did you want to know about each beer? I'm now on Hazy Jane.
This is a cinnamon and tangerine beer.
Oh,
really? Oh. Wow.
It's a Christmas
That's
one.
It's got spice to it, that one.
You're breaking my heart. Those aren't things that go in beer.
No. It's a straw. I think they call it a straw beer because that's the colour of it. And it's got hints of cinnamon and tangerine for Christmas.
So did you grab another Stella?
I did. Well, I should have took a leaf out of Colin's book and turned up with two.
Yeah.
One for each hand.
Well, that was Colin, so, you know.
Yeah, I was trying to be a little bit more gentlemanly, but, you know.
I just bought the box.
Yeah, my lad bought me a...
Yeah, they're empty.
But he bought me a tube of beer. It's quite weird. It's about three foot long.
Uh-huh.
And wow. The size of a beer can square. And it's about six beers all in a row.
Hold on a second. A beer can square or a beer can round?
Well, beer can round, but you know what I mean. Yeah.
I was going to say, where are you buying your beer if the cans are square?
Well.
So now I'm drinking Dead Pony Club.
Dead Pony Club.
I like the way the dead's upside down.
Yeah.
Well, no, it's supposed to be on the
track. I know. I should have said to him, can you turn it the other way up? You've got the writing upside down. Yeah.
People can read it when he's drinking it. So
yeah. The scary thing is, you know, when you've drunk too much is when the writing is all in the correct position.
Yeah, well,
that's when you know it's time to stop.
I've only got three more left now of these ones, so I'm going to have to go to the fridge in a minute.
In a minute.
But they're only tiny cans, aren't they?
I forgot about the British.
3:30.
Yes,
unfortunately, we do drink too much.
Yeah, I know. I bought 1831. I think I bought 31 cans of bottles of beer, and I've got a five pint, one of those barrels. You can buy. I think it's 5 pints in that as well. To last me for 2 weeks, I'm off work. Yeah,
they've nearly all gone.
I got my six pack a week ago, and there are three left.
So. But that's what it should be. Yes, that's how you should do it.
Yeah.
Did I ever tell you that when we first moved over to Britain? And I may have told you guys this one. Before we went over, I joined with a new company. And we had to take, you know, we took a medical as we signed up with their health insurance. And my wife went in for the, for her exam. And they have you fill out the question. And they ask how much do you drink? And my wife has a glass of wine a night. One glass. That's it. Okay. Nothing. You know, very lightweight, you know. And, you know, usually it's with dinner or something like that. And she said, you know, 5 to 6 glasses of wine a week, you know, and that's it. I mean, we're not talking a lot at all. And the nurse who was, you know, the American nurse who was writing it down said, oh, okay, moderate to heavy drink. All right. We got
an English person.
No, that was an American. We got to Britain and we had to fill, you know, you register with the NHS, your local doctor, you fill out the questionnaire. We filled out with the questionnaire. She's answered it the exact same way the nurse wrote, nearly teetotal.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. One glass of wine is not butter to heavy. I remember going out for a do after work with a bunch of the staff, and my boss at the time was going around. There was eight of us, and he said, you know, ask her red wine, white wine, red wine or white wine. You know, what do you want? Do you drink red or do you drink white? Because they asked him for a wine order. And so I said, no, I'm just having a beer. He said, that's it. I said, yeah, just a beer. I'll just drink beer. Okay. And he said, a beer for, you know, for him. And then he says, okay. So went down. I said, okay, there were four people drinking red and three people drinking white. And he said, okay. So it's four bottles of red, four bottles of white, or three bottles of white. Not glasses, just whole bottles. Just ordered it right out there. I sat there like, okay. And that was the first round. So that was an eye opener for me.
It sounds about right.
Yeah.
Oh dear.
Sounds like my party, because I'm about to kill a bottle of wine after this. Yeah. Only $1 for the whole thing. California wine, but
yeah, well, hey,
it's wine. Yeah,
local.
Mm-hmm. So what's the ABV? What's your alcohol content on those cans?
Shoot, I don't even know. Probably nothing, because it tastes like water.
It's Bitburger. It's probably a 3.7.
Yeah.
Well, it's bound to say it causes cancer, because I live in California.
Breathing causes everything cancer.
Yeah, I know. It doesn't say.
Weird. I know. My beer's only
4.5. Wow, I thought that was in the UK. You have to show that.
Yeah, my beer's only 4.5.
Oh, really? Yeah. Nope. It's your 4.8. Yeah.
So I've got 5.4.
Kind of loving. Whoop, wrong way. 5.1.
Blimey, I'm a lightweight. 4.5.
To be fair, the dead pony is only 3.8. So
we got 3.8, 4.7. So that's 5.5, 8.5. So keep going. How many? Adding it up.
Well, I mean, I've got two more.
Either way, it's bad.
Yeah.
4.2. That's an average.
Well, there you go.
Now,
I got booster numbers up.
my wife did say, "Oh, you're recording a podcast and there's beer involved. That's going to go well."
I think it's gone really well.
So what are the plans? Seriously though, let's go back. What are the plans for 2021?
A DBA campaign around the Mediterranean.
Yeah. Okay, that's you're going to do it.
Yeah, we will. Yeah. Oh, definitely, yes.
And me and Simon will try our honorary Infinity Game of the Year.
Yeah.
Yes.
I'd like to go back and play some more Malifaux.
Yes, I would love to be encouraged to put them together.
Yeah. Did you ever play Malifaux before you left, Gary?
No. Well, I saw you guys play it, but I never played.
I had an email from... can't remember the company now, but you remember the confrontation figures? They're redoing the old ones.
Are they?
Oh, maybe it's confrontation. I'm thinking, not Malifaux.
Yeah. Oh, confrontation. That's one lot of figures I didn't sell. They're beautiful.
Cadwallon, French company. Yeah. Classic confrontation models are back, along with Christmas discounts. Ta-da!
Well, now. I beg it. Bye.
No, just half screen it. You can. I'm buying off IKEA at the moment.
Oh, IKEA! There you go.
Well, I'm buying a new desk. Remember, the problem is my desk isn't big enough to do work and painting. There's just too much on the desk, so I have to have stuff like to the side and have to rearrange. So I'm buying a new desk, so then I can have a painting desk and a work desk.
And somewhere for the beer.
I could find a shelf anywhere for
yeah.
that.
Beer's on the hand. So,
so yes, that confrontation I wouldn't mind trying to resurrect. I enjoyed that and still got loads of figures. That was a good game.
Yeah.
But you already got the rules for that, though, haven't you? So you don't, there's nothing yeah. you actually need extra for that.
Just no, paint the damn stuff. Things.
Oh, yeah, paint.
Oh, is it a painting issue, is it?
As always.
Yeah.
Spray it. What you do is you spray it one color and then use a single contrast paint over top of them. You're done.
True. I do tend to spray them one color, but that's white.
Yeah. Well, I remember, if you guys remember, you guys, I don't think the entire time I was there, I ever fielded a painted army. I don't remember ever fielding a painted army while I was there. So
the only one I have is Napoleonic Russian. And that's because I spent 3 years lodging away. So yeah. I had the time to do it.
Well, Colin's been painting all of our Russians, and I've done Austrians and some Prussians. And then I farmed out some figures. I farmed out my French. A guy wanted to learn how to do 6mm Napoleonics. And I said, well, hey, French are easy to start with. So he's doing a great job. The guy does a fantastic job. I'm thrilled. But good. We are four yeah. Leipzig right now. We're 60% of the figures painted.
Brilliant.
And we have all the figures for the game, for the battle. We're talking 10,000 figures. So.
But that's in 6mm.
In 6mm, yeah. Of course. But still.
No, it's a lot of figures. I was just thinking of 10,000, 28mm. And you're like,
You wouldn't have the space big enough for it.
No, you're right. All the muscles to pick them up.
Definitely. Yeah. So our table is going to be 6x10 or 8x10 for it.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah.
Blucher rules again.
Blucher rules again. So.
Yeah, they're good.
But I know I keep wanting to talk. I know Colin and I have talked about it briefly, and I keep wanting to do it. It's to set up some sort of campaign. Whether it's using Pony Wars or Yellow Ribbon or something like that, or even in the Napoleonic game where, you know, we have folks that are all over the place giving the orders and then we fight the battles out wherever. And then we come back and, you know, let whoever connects.
You still do a turn a week, like a chess game. Basically.
Yeah. Kind of that type of thing. And maybe use like a Kriegspiel pattern of that. So, you know, have one player controlling the natives and because they're a wild card anyway, whatever they do. And you have the, you know, competing interests and that. So I don't know. I keep talking about it, but then this year has been a very crap year for work. So I haven't had a chance to breathe. So eventually we'll get to it. But
unfortunately, this year is probably the perfect something like that as well. To other people.
Well, the thing is, you know, everybody talks about how much extra time they've had. You know, a lot of people talk about extra time, you know, working from home. I've worked from home for years. I mean, I just have for years. It's just the way my work is structured. And the only thing different this year is I haven't traveled nearly as much. I haven't traveled at all since February. In fact, my last trip was to Luxembourg and Dublin back in February, just before they started the lockdown. But I haven't traveled since then, but my work has gone crazy because we've actually expanded into seven new countries this year. And we've tripled the amount of, headcount we're running through our programs, but yet the client is, being far more demanding than believable. And it's just, yeah, I'm working so many hours, I can't even keep up with it. So I'm at my end.
I'm doing more hours, between 11 and 12 a day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
By the time you finish, you just think, I don't want to do any painting. I've had enough.
Yeah.
I've been doing a few extra hours, haven't I, Andy?
Yeah, I know. So have I.
Yeah. So it's just like flipping it. So, yeah, I think folks are, I think, more productive or.
Yeah,
and that's why I want to get a separate desk, because I want to put my work stuff away in a corner somewhere where I can work and then walk away from it for the rest of the day. Because at the moment it's in my front room, as you can see. And so in my relaxing area is my work. And so I just constantly think about it, even when I'm not working.
That's what you need, is that area to break away and just kind of get away from it all. So
yeah.
But, mine's upstairs in the back bedroom, my painting table.
Yeah.
Same here.
Well, mine's over here to my right. And yeah. It's so cluttered now, I can't even see the surface of it. And it's not with painting stuff. It's with just junk that happens to get piled on it as I pass by to go to my workstation.
I know I work here on my dining table, which yeah. Which is in front of me.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah. And then, Colin, your work from home consists of checking your laptop. Yep. No emails. I'm done.
Yeah. We've been actually going to work for quite a while. I think May is when we started going full time back to work. But now, like, I wake up early in the mornings because I'm a morning person, as rare as that is. And I pop on the telly, put on a YouTube channel, and listen to some documentaries with an earphone in, plugged into the PlayStation, so it doesn't wake the kid. And then I just sit there with the light and paint in the mornings. And that's how I get away with it. With a 1-year-old.
Well, yeah, and your painting, your painting has really come along over the years. You're doing a good job.
Toys, Ben.
Yeah.
Eat.
Don't let her eat them, please. Don't let her eat them. Yeah. We've got just enough to do Leipzig. Don't let her eat them. We don't have to replace it.
Going back to your question, Gary, we want to try and do. Me and Dave have painted up all the figures for Quattro Bra for Blücher.
Nice.
And we've got all the French and all the Allies for Waterloo, but we don't have any Prussians, Matt.
Very British.
Yeah, we just don't have any Prussians.
They keep on pointing at me for these Prussians.
It may be we might use Russians as surrogates so we can actually play the battle.
Well, only fight the battle up to 3 p.m.
Yeah.
There you go. Yeah. Oh, man. What fun. Yeah.
So we've painted all those this year, and that was another painting project, which has been good. I don't think I've ever done so much painting in a long, long time. I know I had a good couple of years where I painted 600 figures plus, and I must be up there this year.
I don't know. I've painted a lot. I've painted a lot. But a lot of that happened mostly in the spring and into the early summer. It's been in the last 3-4 months I've painted hardly anything. I was so proud. I sprayed a bunch of Empress miniatures, World War I British, about 80 figures. Got them all sprayed the uniform green, you know, like there's the base coat. And then I've got all the khaki webbing done now. Because I do block painting, you know, spray them the base coat of the main color, you know, block paint the things, and then I'll do a wash over them. We got all the khaki done. I'm so happy with that. I got that done. And then somebody mentioned to me about last week something about War of the Roses, and I thought, oh, yeah, I got all those to paint, too.
Sorry.
Thanks, Colin, distracting me.
Sorry.
What scale's that?
I'm going to do War of the Roses in 28 mil.
Okay.
I've got all the figures, but I'm going to do skirmish in 28 mil. But then I also have it in 6 mil for the Lamas battles.
Yeah.
So I'm going to, and I don't know what's a good set of 28 millimeter or a skirmish rules for War of the Roses. I was going to use a very Lion Rampant with modifications for War of the Roses type unit
skills.
Did we use
with sword and pistol or something? Which one do we use?
No,
Simon?
Not for War of the Roses.
No, which one did we use that, didn't we? We used Oh, blimey. We used
Feudal Wars, but not Skirmish, for our set game. When we did a War of the Roses campaign.
Stop.
I know.
You did a campaign?
We did.
Weren't you there?
Did it finish?
Did two campaigns.
Whoa. Wow.
Before you arrived. Yes, Kev did them. And they were. I didn't do the first one. I wasn't in the club when they did the first one, but I did the second one. And I think Andy Collier won both, didn't he?
He did.
Did you say what you're doing next year, Gary?
Yeah, well, we're going to get that Leipzig project done. We got to get it done. That's the big thing. But
good.
I really want to thin out my figures so I only have what I'm actually going to play.
Don't do that. Because that's what you did before, and lo and behold, somebody bought out a set of rules, and you sold the Romans. And that's what I've done for the last 10 years, sell things. And the next 5 minutes later, I'm buying them again.
Well, I know the periods I really like and where I go back to, and I'm going to try and focus on those and get things painted, get things organized. And really, I got 48 years of crap, of wargaming crap around. Now, I've got more wargaming crap. What was that?
Half of it's in the bin, but...
I was gonna say I got more of it from the last 35 years than I did from the first, you know, from the first part of that. But I'm just, you know, things I'm never going to use again, and I do want to get, you know, I want to thin that out a bit. And
it's okay. I'm going to drag him under because this upcoming year, I don't know if you can. Ignore that part. People have been buying up the metal Gebirgsjäger. Like, they're extremely hard to find because everybody wants the old Battlefront metal miniatures. And I'm trying to do the 1940 invasion of Norway.
Yeah.
Which is a total combined arms game, and I love it, and I really want to break ground on it. So as soon as we accomplish Leipzig, I want to start ground on that in 2021. So that means, like, what? Ships. I'm not sure what scale we're going to go yet with air, infantry, maybe two tanks.
Yeah.
French hotfish versus a Nova Fazig, I think it's called.
Yeah.
So, yeah, but I'm going to drag him under for you guys, and he's going to start a new period. So.
Colin,
yeah.
If we do it at 1/285th scale, yeah. I've got all the planes.
You can use the planes at that scale. It doesn't matter.
That's 200. Yeah. That's 200 airplanes right there, German and British. That's the Plastic Soldier Company's Battle of Britain collection.
Okay.
And if 10 quid for 100 airplanes, and they're nice quality.
So, it's really good because, like Andy said, you can play those in any scale because you just claim how high, you can't claim how high up they are. I mean, a plane looks tiny from wherever you look from the ground anyway. So
That's true. But I got to do the dogfighting too. But yeah, we got that German tank. Was it the Germans or the Norwegians that had that experimental multi-turn tank?
The Germans.
Yeah, because I've got the STL file to 3D print that. So we can put that out there. That's for sure.
How has your 3D printing been going?
I haven't printed in months. Neither. I mean, I printed out a lot of terrain, but I haven't printed in months, really. I've got to. I'm having trouble for some reason getting things to stick. I just can't seem to get the base level just right. And I don't know what I'm doing wrong. So I've got to, you know, I keep saying, okay, when I get some time, I'm going to take it apart, clean them, make sure the nozzle's clean, get everything re-leveled and go back to printing. And I just haven't had time.
See, my problem has been that since I've been working from home, the desk that my 3D printer sat on is my work desk. So that's now on the floor somewhere, just out of the way, and I'm not going to print on from the floor. So, it's just sat upstairs in my spare room, gathering dust.
But when I
get my second desk, which I'm looking at buying today, I'm hoping that changes everything.
Well, eventually, if I get a shed or something that I'm not working in the house and I have my own office away from the house, I do want to get a resin printer. Because they're beautiful. They just, the work they do is beautiful.
But you need it to be separate to your house.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, they smell. All right. Well, you know, guys, I'm looking at the time here. We've been chatting for almost 2 hours.
Well, me and you have been chatting for 2 hours.
Well, we've been chatting for two. My wife and I went out for a walk. We love going out for walks and that, and I really enjoy that time we have together when we do that. But we wanted to get back here in time to get started. Normally, I come in and get about 30 minutes before I start to set up the Zoom, start it up, and then just kind of go over all the settings. So I sat down here, put my beer down, my glass, I logged in, and as I'm going, I hear, hello, hello, and my headphones are on, and here's Matt had already dialed in and had been waiting. What, you've been waiting a half hour before I got on?
Yeah.
So.
But I was just doing something else on my computer. It wasn't like I was just sat here going, doo-doo-doo-doo-doo.
Yeah. Yeah, so, but yeah, we've been going for almost 2 hours, and I still have things that I need to do tonight for work tomorrow. Unfortunately, I still have my day job, and Mega Millions lottery here in the United States is up to $376 million. And it would be so nice to win because I have a lot of painting to do. I could do with that.
But, remember to distribute.
Yeah, well, yeah. I got to remember.
The money, not the painting.
Well, the first thing I got to do is remember to buy a ticket someday. But, oh, well, that's a different thing.
That's an obscene amount of money.
Divided over 30 years, though. So.
And half taxes. Yeah,
yeah, well, it's 40% taxes about. So.
Get taxed on it.
Let me see.
You get taxed on all lottery.
Yeah, you get taxed on gambling winnings. Unlike for the American listeners here in Britain, you do not get taxed on gambling winnings. So if you win at the racetrack, you win at the lottery, you don't get taxed. It's tax-free income.
The lottery, you get taxed, I believe.
No, you don't get taxed on the lottery. You get taxed on horse racing.
Do you, Steve?
You can pay the tax up front.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
When you place a bet, you pay the tax on the bet, and then if you win, you don't pay tax on the winnings.
Yeah,
I'd pay the tax on the other way around.
If you don't pay tax on the bet, you're in big trouble if you win a lot of money.
Whoops. Yeah,
you pay the tax. It's pay the tax on the bet.
But what's that Spanish lottery? Did that go to a billion? Did it that
euros big, or euros?
Euros. Yeah. What's it called?
I mean, yen.
it's called something like the big one or something in Spanish, and it's
El Grosso.
It's something like that, yeah. Yeah.
Oh,
so you
man.
Pay tax on your winnings.
Yeah. So if you figure that out, that's gonna be, let me see, you got 376 divided by 30, and then about 6.2. You're looking at probably about $7.7 million a year after taxes for 30 years.
Oh, that you don't get a lump sum, it's just like an income.
Well, if you take a lump sum, then you only get 60% of the total, and then you get taxed on that 40% tax on that. So you get 60% of 60% take home. So that's still a lot. That's a lot of money. But, you know, knowing me, I'd blow it on figures in the first, you know, and I'd have nothing left. So, you know, because, yeah, I would buy several million dollars worth of figures knowing me. So.
Well, and the storage area to put it all in.
Well, yeah, you'd have to. My war game within. So
it's a big shed.
No, seriously though. I've still got work. So I'm gonna start to wind this up. But I figured, you know, what better way to kick out, you know, to kick 2020 down the road than just to have a chat with some old friends and kind of shoot the shit over wargaming. As we say.
Yeah, that was a good idea, mate. That was good.
Yeah.
Well, I raise a toast to all of our, you know, all the friends over there, and you know, that we did lose some folks this year, unfortunately, but you know, there's next year. We got new wargaming's coming into the pike. Coming down the pike that we need to train. Now granted, Blair still has about 14 years to go before she's ready to really be a true war gamer.
10.
Okay. Right. Yeah. I'll get her started. Again. So yeah. Colin's going to get her started painting horses. So that'll be the first thing.
Yeah.
Or just painted horses, but using one color, then three washes. And blimey, just to paint a horse.
I started my girls on Games Workshop skeletons and dwarves. So one daughter had the skeletons and the other one had the dwarves. They were pink, green.
But they were painted.
Yes, they had great fun. And they were painted quicker than mine are.
Well, those are the colors. I might just use the ancient Indians I have.
There you go. So here are your colors, dear. Go do with those. So,
yes. Oh, do you remember those pink aliens, Simon, which Graham did? Those Ground Zero Game aliens, which were all bright pink. Oh, they were amazing. Oh.
They were part of a game, weren't they?
Yeah. He bought them, painted them. And there was about, he had about 50 of them, all the same figure, all painted exactly the same. I can't remember what game we played with them, but it was a bit,
off the wall.
Off the wall, yeah.
Actually, for aliens, hot pink would not be a bad color. Put a little light, a soft tone wash on it, and you're all set.
You're away. I think it was, do you remember the early Games Workshop titillating pink? Do you remember that color? Very bright, and they're like, oh, dear.
Yeah.
That's a pink horror pink now, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it's scintillating pink, I think it was called.
There's
scintillating pink.
One of the Marines' girlfriends or wives or whatever brings up, and they, with their group of 40K players in the hobby shop, she has a hot pink Space Marine army that she plays with.
Wow.
Her Space Marines are all, they're nicely painted, but they're all in hot pink armor.
Yeah.
So.
They're certainly a scene in the battlefield, aren't they?
Yeah. I don't know why she doesn't do Sisters of Battle or whatever that one thing is called, but.
If you go to the jungle, you got a clash. For all the good, boring Vietnam people. Yeah, good.
That was funny. I forgot about that.
Talking of hot pink, Jane and I last night, we sat down and watched a film, Grease.
Oh, not my.
1978. That's what reminded me of that. It was oh my god, a real blast from the past that was.
Oh, that was bad. We watched a 1958 movie. Was it Book, Bell, and Candle with Jimmy Stewart last now?
No,
that was bad. I'm sorry, I'm a Jimmy Stewart fan, and that was a bad movie. That was a bad.
I can't believe with pay TV you end up watching that kind of stuff.
Yeah,
over here it's free and you have to watch it.
We got so much crap. I mean, we sit there and we yell at the TV as we're going through the remote because we can't find anything to watch, and it's just like, you know, we've neither here nor there. I'm about ready to trash it all, but not much we can do.
No.
So we do find ourselves watching Broadchurch and Blackadder and Black Books. Those are and AbFab. So those are our goal for
Blimey.
Blackadder's funny.
Yeah, I like Black Books too. That's Blackadder. We just watched which one? Amy and Aimability, season 3, episode 4 or 5 on Blackadder this morning. So, in fact, I actually use Blackadder season 4 as my painting guide for my British. So, and for anybody who's in the United States listening, YouTube, go to YouTube, do a search for Blackadder season 4. Watch it. That's it.
Is that the last one, is it? Is that Blackadder goes forth?
Yeah.
Yes.
He did one after that called Back and Forth, which was a special where they went back and forth in time. But that was it.
That's a Christmas special or something, wasn't it?
Isn't it?
Yeah,
I think they did it in 99 or something like that when we were over there. Somewhere around there, if I remember correctly. But anyway, guys, I'm going to go ahead and stop the recording now, and I want to wish you guys all a very happy new year, and all of our listeners a happy new year. Colin,
happy new year.
We've had a ball doing this, so right, guys.
Yeah, hopefully we can do it all again. Happy new year, everybody.
Yeah, it is time.
I think I want to do a holiday special every holiday for something, so we'll have to create a holiday to do it. But as long as beer's involved, we'll do it.
But where they tie in?
What was that?
Where they tie in together, like Easter. We don't do Thanksgiving.
We can be there for Thanksgiving. It's fine. We just don't need to be as thankful as other people.
I figured. Hold on, guys. I got it. The 4th of July. Yep.
Yeah.
We'll come and celebrate.
There we go. Will.
Celebrate that you're gone from us.
The ungrateful colonial day.
Don't they call it Rebels Day or something? What they call it? Don't they call it Rebels Day or Rebellion Day, some people?
Yeah, it's just the Independence Day.
Yes, yeah. Yeah.
Oh. Isn't that Guy Fawkes Night? You know, blow up Parliament, create some fireworks?
I don't understand it. The Brits, have a holiday where they celebrate the attempted burning of their parliament.
And it's we not have a holiday.
Well, when I was there, we had fun.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, we do.
And,
yeah.
And we had a party, and we have a party to celebrate the forming of ours. I think you guys have it right. That's a different story. So with that, folks, I'm going to stop recording. I think we need to sign off and kick 2020 in the ass and get it out of our way and look forward to greater achievements in 2021.
Cheers to that.
There you go.
Hopefully I get more painting done.
More painting. That's all we got to do. More painting. Thank you for listening to Across the Pond Wargamers. We've been glad that you've been part of our 2020, and we look forward to continuing on in 2021. Happy New Year's, everyone.